This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Finally, we get the Roman Reigns heel turn. This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham, and we are talking WWE in the wake of Great Balls of Fire, that so well named pay-per-view that WWE put on last night, the Raw brand pay-per-view, and actually a pretty good show. You know, I think in my preview last week, I talked about how I wasn't fond of the walk-up and the storylines leading into the show, but I thought the show itself would be enjoyable, and I think it turned out to be that way by and large, especially the last couple of matches. Talk about Roman Reigns in a second. Kind of tease there that that's what we're going to focus on a lot today. But man, you know, the main event match, the Brock Lesnar versus Samoa Joe match, actually turned out pretty well too for what it was. You know, Brock Lesnar in this day and age, he's a guy that he's not going to put on the 5-star match. He's not going to be the guy that's going to do a lot of, you know, they're not going to be 30-minute matches. They're not going to be anything approaching a 60-minute time limit draw or anything like that. But the 10 to 12 minutes you get from Brock Lesnar are going to be enjoyable as long as he's got a good opponent. Samoa Joe proved to be a pretty formidable opponent, you know, a good legitimate opponent. You know, it was a slobber knocker of a match, to use the Dusty Rhodes term. And, you know, Joe made it believable. I mean, for a fleeting second there, I thought, man, they might actually book Joe to win this thing here. And, you know, his pre-match attack on Lesnar, give Lesnar some credit. He sold well in this match. He sold early. He sold that pre-match attack. He stumbled well. You know, I don't know if he went out and got a sunburn intentionally, but he looked red in the face from a couple of those attempted coquina clutches from Samoa Joe. And you kind of knew it was going to end with Joe attempting another coquina clutch and Lesnar getting him in an F5. But that said, you know, again, I thought that match sold. It sold what it did what it needed to do. The belt's still around Lesnar's waist, but Joe comes out of it looking stronger. And so both guys got what they needed there. Honestly, I think that the match before that, the semi-main event, Roman Reigns versus Braun Strowman, WWE fans, the WWE Universe, got what it needed out of that match. A double turn. That's a rare one. You know, going into the match, at least on paper, Braun Strowman's your heel. Roman Reigns is your top babyface coming out of that show. It's going to be interesting to see tonight. I'm recording this a couple of hours before Raw opens at 8 o'clock Eastern time. It's about 5:45 as I'm recording this. But I'm anticipating an opening segment where Roman Reigns is going to be asked to explain his actions. He loses the match. I was a little surprised that he lost the match. I think I'm probably not alone in that. And credit to WWE for giving us that bit of a surprise. I thought all along when the match got back towards the ambulance and the doors were open that Roman Reigns would spear Strowman through the open doors, close the doors, and he would win the match. Well, a spear attempt was made, and Strowman, all 6'8", 380 pounds of him, avoided the spear, shut the doors, wins the match. But it wasn't over. Reigns attacks afterwards and actually puts locks Strowman into the ambulance and then crashes the ambulance into a tractor trailer backstage. And in the course of that, I mean, you know, obviously he can't accept defeat. He puts lives at risk by doing so, you know, storyline-wise. And then Strowman has to be rescued, literally, jaws of life. And I love the way WWE during the show played this out. They sent one of those impromptu matches out. I think it was Heath Slater. I can't think of who his opponent was, but it doesn't really matter. They sent a match out, made it feel like an unplanned, hey, we're just trying to cover for time here. Didn't even show the ending to the match on the TV screen. We heard the winner announced over the loudspeaker as Kurt Angle and crew were trying to attend to whatever happened to Braun Strowman in the back. And Strowman comes out so sympathetic. He gets cut out of the ambulance with the jaws of life and refuses medical treatment. And so literally the split second there, in the blink of an eye, you have Roman Reigns going from your top babyface to heel, and you have Braun Strowman getting the sympathy of being the aggrieved victim And he gets, you know, as a result, he gets, he's the face now. So, I think also you can kind of tell, you know, thinking now about Brock Lesnar winning his match with Samoa Joe. When Samoa Joe attacked Paul Heyman a couple of times leading up to the to that match, and the pull aparts that were done with he and Brock Lesnar, you know, it was hard to tell, because in this day and age it can be hard to tell who's the face, who's the heel sometimes. But just the people who were involved in those pull aparts, who was pulling, say, Samoa Joe, who was pulling Brock Lesnar, and it was heels who were involved in restraining Samoa Joe. It was faces who were involved in sort of holding back Lesnar. So subtly, very subtly, Lesnar was made into a face in the course of that action. His managers attacked. I mean, you know, those kind of things. And now you've got Roman Reigns as a heel. He's going to get some heat, obviously, starting tonight and going beyond. And so WWE's got a situation now where Brock Lesnar's back where he was, I'd say, in a way, going into WrestleMania 32, even though he was titularly, at least, he was a heel then and Reigns was a face. Lesnar doing the ESPN appearances, was he going to stay in WWE? He was going to go to UFC. He was given some treatment as a face there. He's definitely going to be a face going into SummerSlam, and I think it's presumable that, you know, I don't know, maybe the Reigns Strowman thing plays out a little bit further. It plays into SummerSlam. Who knows? We know that Lesnar's scheduled for SummerSlam, and we don't know who he's scheduled against at this stage. So we have to figure out who the dance partners are. That starts tonight with Raw. But if they wanted to go the route, if the creative in WWE wanted to go the route of matching up Reigns and Lesnar at this stage, you have them in the place where a lot of fans want them to be. Lesnar as the face, and Reigns as the heel. And you know, I've been saying this for a while. When we talk wrestling on this podcast, I've been saying for a while that WWE needed to make a heel turn possible and make it a reality for Roman Reigns, if the plan long term is to make him your top face. Because, you know, in this day and age, I keep using that term, but in this day and age, fans want to cheer for a guy that they used to boo for, that they should boo for. They want to cheer for sort of that Steve Austin anti-hero type. And when they were force-fed Roman Reigns as a face, they just didn't respond well. The fans didn't like being told who they were supposed to root for. Now they can lustily boo Roman Reigns. But you're going to start seeing some fans peeling off already, you know? I mean, the actual Reigns fans are going to peel off. But then some folks who are the self-styled anti-disestablishmentarians among the WWE Universe crowd are going to say, you know what? WWE now is telling us we're supposed to boo Roman Reigns. I'm going to start cheering him. And that will slowly build over time. And if the WWE plays it right, and playing it right means, you got to let this germinate for a while. You got to let him be a heel for a while. You can't turn him heel now and then quickly turn him face. He's got to be a heel all the way through at least Royal Rumble, if not even beyond that, for us to buy it and to, you know, and really get into the character. I think they'll do that, because I think that the Reigns experiment just wasn't working. It just wasn't working with him being force-fed to us as that face. So, you know, long-term strategy. I mean, long-term, Roman Reigns is going to be the guy you build your company around. But you gotta do the slow build, and WWE finally doing the slow build. I think this also indicates some other things here. I mean, you know, Lesnar's probably around a little longer than maybe fans had thought, because you do need a top face to carry your company around. Now Lesnar's not going to be on TV every week, so it's going to be interesting to see who sort of plays that role on Raw. You know, if you'd brought AJ Styles over, it could have seen that, but Styles was left on the SmackDown brand. Maybe it's Seth Rollins. You know, Rollins, but Rollins, you know, losing on the opener last night to Bray Wyatt, clean pinfall. I call it a clean pinfall. I know there was a poke in the eye, but gosh, poke in the eye is all it takes. There was no outside interference. There were no other shenanigans. Basically, a clean fall to Bray Wyatt doesn't bode well for the at least the short-term future of Seth Rollins. And so I don't know. It'll be interesting. The layout tonight, beginning tonight, will kind of tell us where things are going to start going, especially as we head into SummerSlam. But of course, SummerSlam setting the table for Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, and beyond. So switching gears, the tag team situation a bit unsettled now as well, with the seeming resolution to the Hardy Boys versus Sheamus and Cesaro feud. And, you know, the match last night playing out well. It's weird to see matches that can go on for 15 or 20 minutes and get one fall, and then you see a 30-minute match and there's what are effectively seven falls. And, you know, count outs and disqualifications, things like that, counting as falls in this match. You know, the surprise appearance of the Hardys at WrestleMania now seems very much in the rear view. The whatever legal wrangling is or isn't being done with the Hardys' broken characters being what it is or isn't, the Hardy train sort of is not quite derailed, but it's at the station and it's not moving right now. And you know, Sheamus and Cesaro don't have much of at least established set of challengers in the foreground. Enzo and Cass breaking up, New Day having moved over to SmackDown. It'll be interesting to see who emerges next. And it seems like last night was a resolution. Unless we're turning in the direction of the Hardys finally being able to use their broken characters. I don't know. I don't think that's coming. It doesn't feel like it's coming. We'll see tonight. But you want to hope that the work to build this tag team division back up, and both on Raw and SmackDown, the tag team divisions have been given a lot of push over the last couple of years, and it's been good to see. I think tag team wrestling is a very valuable part of a company's stable. I know as one who helps put on independent wrestling cards and has for several years now, you know, you've got to have good tag teams. I mean, fans want to see it. It's different. It's different entertainment than the singles matches. Singles matches are great. When you have two really top level singles wrestlers in a match, it's very entertaining. But tag team wrestling is, it just offers different, from an entertainment standpoint, offers different aspects. You know, there are double team moves that are exciting that obviously you can't do in a singles match. There's opportunity for the heels to do more dastardly things. If the heels have a manager, even more so. There's always that possibility of guys turning on each other. I mean, there's so many more potential things that can happen. And so tag team wrestling is a very important part of a card. And, you know, so I'd like to see the push continue. But again, right now, it's very uncertain as to where things are going to go. The women's division, actually, I love that match last night, and I love the result actually too. The match with Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks. You know, I know that there are fans out there, and I'm actually one of them. I'm a Sasha Banks mark, and I love her what she does in the ring, and she always brings it. And so, you know, the fan in me wants to see her win the belt, but the creative in me, I guess, if I could say it that way, I wanted to see what ended up happening. I didn't want to see her lose the match. I didn't want to see Sasha lose the match. But, you know, she's already a three-time champion. I know Alexa Bliss has been the champion both on SmackDown and on Raw. But, you know, to see Alexa get at least walk away from a match with Sasha Banks still with a belt around her waist elevates her even beyond what those two belts do. Because Sasha and Charlotte Flair have been the class of WWE women's wrestling the past couple of years through this women's revolution. They've been the two stars. And so splitting them on the two brands was a very smart move. And so, you know, yeah, use Sasha's status to elevate other wrestlers in that division. And, you know, and then we get the Alexa Bliss winning by count out, smirking as she you know, uses the champion's advantage. Classic heel. I mean, that's, you know, Ric Flair or anybody from the 70s and 80s right there. The psychology of that was so well done that was very impressed with with the way that match played out. And I'll say in terms of psychology too, you know, the matches I've seen from WWE lately have so much more in the way of psychology than I've been used to seeing from WWE. Before the show last night, I caught up on NXT from this week, and the NXT title match, Bobby Roode defending against Roderick Strong, you know, former TNA Impact champion versus former ROH champion, sort of a dream match for those of us who follow wrestling. And that match, again, those are two guys. Now, Roderick Strong, the Messiah of the Backbreaker. Bobby Roode is your classic heel. I mentioned Ric Flair from the 70s and 80s. You know, he's your classic 70s, 80s champion who is the heel who will do anything to keep the belt. He evokes a stylish image in the ring. He, you know, brings class, but he's not a guy who's going to jump off ropes. He's not a guy that's going to do all kinds of odd things in the ring. He's not a extreme wrestler, not a hardcore wrestler. But just from a psychology standpoint, that match was strong. Working the leg, you know, the way the cameras kept panning out to the crowd to show us Roderick Strong's mother and his fiance, and we've of course have been given that backstory for weeks leading up to this match of how he's at a great place in his life, and then, you know, he wins the belt. At least it seemed for a second or two, because Roode's foot was outside the ring. The referee didn't notice until after he hit the three count. That was, again, the psychology of that. The psychology in the Rollins versus Wyatt match, I thought, was pretty solid, too. And, you know, the Reigns and Strowman match was well done from a psychology standpoint. I thought that the Lesnar-Joe match, again, from a psychology standpoint, you know, you got Joe attacking before the match. There have been weeks of him attacking Paul Heyman, sneaking up from behind and getting Lesnar the pull aparts and everything else. This has been some good stuff. You know, WWE gets criticized, and rightly so, for having people write the shows who aren't wrestling people, having Hollywood writers write the shows. It seems to me like the wrestling people have been taking the shows back over of late. And I love seeing the whole Miz thing, the Miz Taraj, you know, what's otherwise a pretty stale matchup with him and Dean Ambrose. They've wrestled a million times, it seems like, in the last few months. You know, the way that plays out, I want the Miz to win the match. I want to see the belt around him. It feels like a stable with him and his Miz Taraj. You've got Bo Dallas. I saw a writer refer to him as being sort of the Walter Sobchak of the group. The reference to the Big Lebowski character played by John Goodman. You've got Curtis Axel, I don't know what role Axel is playing right now. He's dressed up to the nines. He's very, you know, and then of course Maurice out there. Interesting little grouping they've got there. I love what they do with The Miz. The Miz is another guy that doesn't jump off ropes. He doesn't do all kinds of weird stuff. Just goes out there, and his psychology is so good in the ring. He really gets you to hate him. He does a great job. He's supreme at his job as being the chicken shit heel. So good match with him last night. Yeah, good show overall. And I really like the direction things are going with the with Raw particularly right now. So we'll see how things go tonight with the show. Heading into SummerSlam season. Got to see where things take us. We got some build to do here. And it's been a little bit of fun, a surprising little bit of fun here going into SummerSlam season. So that'll wrap us up for the podcast for today at least. And we'll review the show tonight. We'll see if there's anything more to comment upon. Of course, SmackDown tomorrow night. You got NXT this week. We're starting to get back into now TNA has rebranded itself as Global Force Wrestling, taking the name that Jeff Jarrett started his company a couple years ago, trying to run away and hide from the TNA name and the associations therein. We'll keep up with what they've got going on, and we'll talk some more wrestling soon. But for now, we'll sign off. For Street Knowledge, I'm Chris Graham. Have a great night, everybody.